joined by musician, composer, sound artist, and now author Daniel Bevan, who's just released the book Future Door Clap, the primitive art group and braille collective story about the improvisatory scene in Wellington around the late 70s and early 80s. Thank you so much for joining us this fine morning. Where are you calling from?
Hello, Sophia. Yeah, I'm here at home in Pai Kakariki.
Lovely. How's it down there?
Peacock is always awesome. Yeah, it's kind of a grey day, but you always feel like you're on holiday here, so, which is nice.
That is a lovely thing. Your involvement in music and sound in general is very extensive. How do you best break down into a nutshell all the different ventures you've taken?
I'm a musician. Just leads you on to the various kind of things, you know, I'm interested in. I mean, obviously playing music, writing music, and then as I'm interested in other people's music, so I'm interested in finding stuff and exploring other music. And also, like, a lot of my life in the last 15 years has been running Pyramid Club, and before that, a place called Fred's, which are venues for experimental music in Wellington. So heaps of my time as a musician is actually kind of like enabling other people to do their music and put on stuff and commission works and that kind of thing. So it's all rolled up. I don't know how it all works together, but yeah, it's all just around loving the love of music.
That's so lovely. Is there a favorite little side quest that you've taken in throughout your life that you'd like to mention?
I don't know. They're all side quests, you know. One of the things I love is adventures, you know, like exploring things, and so I've done some really epic cool trips in different parts of the world, just sort of following music and sound and having a mic and doing field recording, so, you know, through Mongolia or in Rajasthan and India, places like that. That's kind of been fun adventures, musical adventures.
Well, I'm so glad I asked. I bet your computer is just stacked with all these different recordings from across the world.
Yeah, well, they're all on different era medium. Like, I even had loads of mini discs. You know, I was like, man, I got to find a mini disc player.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's impossible.
Although the funny thing is, I was looking to buy a new van, like an old new van, and the one I was looking at on Trade Me, in the rather than a cassette player or a CD player in the car, it's got a mini disc player. I was like, damn, that's a good selling point. I might get that.
Yeah, it's a good selling point for a very niche audience.
Yeah.
For listeners who may be thinking, what is Primitive Art Group? How would you best describe it?
People might know of a type of music making called improvisation, or a kind of genre called free jazz, which is most known as a type of music that came out of America during the civil rights era, particularly like Ornette Coleman is a really famous name, or Sun Ra, or some of John Coltrane's work. So these are the sort of that's a kind of music making that Primitive Art Group embarked on here in their own kind of weird Aotearoa way. And they've the membership went up and down a bit, but musicians from who arrived in Wellington in the late 70s and early 80s, and they kind of worked it out for themselves. They weren't trained, most of them had no training as musicians, and several came from visual art backgrounds, but they were, all had this kind of real passion for trying to work on free jazz and structured music and improvisation as their mode of music making. And so they over a few years they really developed their own sound, which has even, you know, some of those musicians are still really active in Wellington today. And even if they weren't, it's like the influence of what they did is still felt really strongly in the city through things like Pyramid Club. You know, the kind of music I've been involved in has direct links to what those people did 40-something years ago.
I was just going to ask, what was the base camp for musicians and artists back in the 70s and 80s?
Base camp?
Yeah, was there like a meeting ground?
It was sort of, it wasn't, yeah, there were various kind of places. The what interesting, yeah, part of this doing this book was looking at all these sort of different spaces that artists and musicians in Wellington have either used or like created over the years. For me, that's particularly interesting because I'm running a space like that, and there were several really cool spaces. There was one called the Artists Co-op, which was in the kind of wharf area of Wellington in this huge wool store that's now been demolished, but it stretched along hundreds of meters along this road in Wellington down by the port. And they, the artist co-op had the top floor of this building. And one of the guys, Barry Thomas, who started it, used to ride on a bike to kind of get from one part of their premises to the other because it was so massive. So it was easier on a bike, rather than walking. But yeah, so that was a space for, visual arts and all sorts of stuff, and music as well, performances and shows. So that was a cool one. And then actually kind of weirdly, the Wellington City Council in those days had this space, which is sort of the precursor to what's now called Toi Honiki, which is the council art rooms in Wellington. But way back then there was a they started this endeavor called the Art Centre, and it was seems pretty loose. It was like in those days you had work schemes, and artists could get like 6 months of paid employment to do kind of art, start, teach kids at a school or do some performances at the hospital or play an outside gig or whatever it was, And so the Art Centre would kind of broker these employment opportunities for artists, and the different artists and musicians would gather there kind of every day and work on collaborative shows and that kind of thing.
Can you tell us more about the relationship between what was happening in the 1980s in general and the music that was being produced at the same time?
Oh, you mean, yeah, in the kind of wider sphere of
Just in terms
culture.
of Muldoon and whatnot.
I mean, yeah, that was one of the things with this book I was trying to do was to weave the context, the kind of social, political, economic context into what effect that had on the music.
Yeah, I find
Sorry, I
it.
got a really, like chesty cough. I got to mute everything in here.
Worries. Do your thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was heavy, pretty heavy days. I mean, I was a little baby in like 1981, so I wasn't really aware of anything. But it was really interesting looking back on that time and seeing how the kind of impact that had on the music. So, I mean, in some ways, like Muldoon, at least the kind of policies his government was working in with were things like these temporary employment schemes that artists could use. And so, like it was really a kind of like positive time for being an artist in some ways, but in other ways, he was like this bogeyman, like this kind of evil, seemingly evil guy that would, and through the Springbok tour, particularly, with all the police presence in Wellington, you had Molesworth Street, which was the first real big clash of police and anti-tour protesters, where police came out and battened a whole bunch of people, so they had the Red Squad, which was their kind of like anti-tour special squad, which would go around to gigs and just sort of stand in front of the gig and create a kind of bad vibe. So yeah, all that stuff was going on. And so with Primitive Art Group, who, they weren't, these guys weren't punks and weren't into punk music, but for various reasons, particularly this kind of protest around the Springbok tour and also like anti-nuclear protests, they got kind of enveloped in this sort of wider movement of protest and protest music and gigs that would have loads of punk bands and they're kind of quite radical, noisy, free jazz sort of fitted into this quite heavy, chaotic scene.
What was it like writing this book and having to dig around throughout the archives? Did you have to call up old friends and fact check something? Like, how did you go about compiling a book telling the story of lived realities?
So it's largely based on my interview, like conversations with heaps of people, the main musicians, but also like a wide community of activists and artists and musicians that were part of the scene in the 80s. So there's, I'd say 55 people, I think, something like that, that I interviewed for the book. The archive material, there was loads of recordings, but there wasn't heaps in the kind of official archives of, about this stuff. One thing I found kind of interesting was that even for quite, you know, underground and niche music back in those days, there was a lot of reviews that were written, even in like mainstream papers like the Don Post or the Dominion or Evening Post or whatever, quite regularly would have reviews of like some of the Braille Collective. That's what Primitive Art Group kind of morphed into, a thing called the Braille Collective. Some of those bands would be reviewed in the paper, and there were these fantastic kind of underground regular music newspapers in Wellington, run by a bunch of writers and kind of spearheaded by a guy called Gary Steele.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, one was called In Touch, and then it became Tom, which was the Only magazine. And they would like write loads of great reviews about the albums and the gigs. And so looking through all those, not just about the stuff I was focused on, like Primitive Art Group, but just in the wider music scene, I was like, man, there was a lot of really great writing going on at that time about music and live music.
Yeah. Do you think that is something that you're seeing, unfortunately, trailing away, is this print culture, I mean, you know, about things like music reviews?
I mean, I don't know, I've been involved in playing music, you know, in Wellington for 25 years, and maybe you got one or two like reviews in local print magazines, or I mean, those print magazines don't really exist anymore in the same way, you know. It's, stuff is online, but even so, there's doesn't seem to be an emphasis on reviewing live gigs. I don't know why that is, but it was, I mean, it's good from my point of view, like I could use that stuff as great material for writing a book, but also I guess like actually at the time, in the moment, it sort of helps create this community and, you know, let people know what's going on, and also it's a good outlet for writers, you know, like just people to hone their writing craft.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a quote about this book that I especially like by Don McGlashan, who says, "Everyone who wants to start a band in Aotearoa should read this book. How do you hope this book will serve as a documentation of history, especially for maybe younger people coming into the music scene?"
Yeah, that was lovely of Don to write, hey?
Mm.
Like the dedication, you know, at the start of a book, you do a dedication of who it's for. And so I wrote, let me just see I get it right. It's dedicated to all the musicians of Wellington, past, present, and future. But what I meant by that was it's dedicated to the musicians I'm writing about in the past. It's also like a kind of a family history of my generation of musicians in Wellington interested in creative music, which is like quite broad, you know, like the people who have had direct contact with these musicians go through all sorts of pop music, like huge bands to really underground stuff, you know. So it's a large community of people who have direct relationship with this history. And then it's for the future musicians who kind of are going to inherit what the music scene in Wellington will be in, you know, 50 years time. This book will hopefully still be available somewhere on a library shelf or whatever. And so like in 50 years, a young musician who's doing something radical might pick this up and learn something about their ancestors, you know?
Yeah, that's so cool. I'm yet to get my hands on this book, but from what I've heard and seen is that there's over 100 illustrations. What can people expect from these?
Yeah, we really threw everything at the kind of design edit, which was amazing and sort of epic project in itself, designing the book with the fantastic designer called Carla Shulam, who's now based in Palmerston North. And she was involved in the early days of the White Fungus magazine, if people are familiar with that really fantastic art and music magazine, now based in Taiwan. So Carla comes from that kind of, you know, that sort of underground art design perspective. And so she just did great stuff. Yeah, there's, I did count them up. I think it's something like 150 photos and images in the book. So it's pretty much every page has at least one or two photos on it. And yeah, it's, I mean, when I usually read a book, I kind of pick it up and I start from the back and I thumb through and look at all the photos.
You start from the back.
Usually I just pick it up and I thumb through from the back and I just, I don't read it. But I kind of wrote, as well as wanting people to read the words, which I'm kind of like hopeful they'll get something out of. It's equally for someone like me who just actually looks at all the photos, you know.
Yeah, no, it's nice that you considered like different formats of reading, like sitting down and reading something or just thumbing through something, but still being able to pick out pieces from that. My final question for you is, do you see any more books coming out in your future?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people ask me that. It's like, oh my God, it's the last thing I want to do right now is write another book.
This one just came out. Yeah.
But, you know, like I'm really looking forward to, it's been great. I love doing this. It's also, it's such a different thing than music, you know, like I'm used to picking up a guitar and I can like turn the amp on and put some fuzz on and kick it around and it kind of does its own thing and I don't need to think about it. It just tells me what it wants and I can sort of play music and it comes really naturally. And writing for me is like that complete opposite, you know. You have to think about every single word and it's such a kind of like beautiful and painful and laborious and, you know, it's like crazy thing to do. So I've got all these ideas of like, after doing this, it's like, oh, that would make an interesting book or this, but it's like, dude, hold on a minute, man, give yourself a break.
Yeah.
And don't try to kind of like embark on anything like that. And then, so I do have some thoughts about what could be a good book, but I also am looking forward to and enjoying working on music, just like more focused now that this book is finished.
Yeah, absolutely. Look after yourself first so you don't implode with ideas. This book can be bought flying in, flying out, just the good old record stores. And if you go online, you'll be able to find it too. Is there anywhere else that you'd like to
plug? People will be listening in Auckland. So, probably those places are the best. I don't know where else. Like, you can buy them through Pyramid Club's shop. But you have to pay for postage, so it probably makes sense to get it locally.
Yeah, go into your local record store. We're going to play Charles Mung Bean from the Primitive Art Group. Thank you so much, Dan, for joining us on this lovely grey morning.
Thank you for having me.
Mung Bean by Primitive Art Group. The book was called Future Jaw Clap, The Primitive Art Group and Braille Collective Story. Thank you to Dan once again for calling us this morning and thanks to the lovely Texan.
Thank you.